His radio career began in 1967. He's been heard on stations both in Western and Eastern Canada. Tom Jeffries is on the other side of the microphone today.
Nice to see you, Michael. It's kind of fun seeing you. I should point out to our listeners that I had the pleasure of opposing Michael for a number of years. You were a chum. I was at CFTR back in the 70s, and I used to hate listening to you because you sounded so damn good. So it's nice that we're on the same team, and thanks for inviting me today.
How did you get started? I think it was at CFAX in Victoria,
wasn't it? I did. I was working at UVic Radio back in the 60s, Michael, and back in those days, in the early 60s, UVic was a very small school. We had the health sciences building out behind the sub, and that's where they put the radio station in the basement, smelling like fuel oil and the works. A friend of mine in one of my classes said, look, if I miss my block this week, Tommy, I'm going to lose my show. Can you sit in? I said, I don't know about radio. As soon as I saw the lights, Michael, as soon as I said, you mean do you play records and have fun, I was hooked. It started from there, and I was working at a station in Victoria called Al's Esso on Hillside, and back in the day, Barry Bowman, the morning mayor, they used to have CFAX cars, came in one night, and I said, Mr. Bowman, I'm sorry to bother you. My name's Tom, and I work at UVic Radio. Is there any chance to get a job at the CFAX? And being the kind man that Mr. Bowman is, hello, Barry, he said, come and see me. So I went down, I met with Walter Cowden, the program director, and I got a job, Michael, 3:30 to midnight, 6 days a week, for the massive sum of $204 a month. And that's how I started. But we loved the business. And the point is, then, I think, and I hate to put words in your mouth, but I think it's fair to say what you just said. I think we would have worked for nothing because we got hooked early, and I think we've been hooked ever since.
And it's like everyone else in this business says, never worked a day in your life because it was so much fun.
For the most part, I've had a couple of rough days. We'll go into that here, but my favorite line that I used my friend Freddie Latrimoe is no heavy lifting, no windows. You got to talk to wonderful people. I work with some of the smartest, greatest people. And so all in all, after 42, just about 43 years, I've got very few things to complain about.
So this was at CFAX. You were doing afternoons there. And then it mentions that you did some work at CKDA as well.
I did. I wound up going over to work for Art Simmons, the news director there. Learned just about everything from soup to nuts, running the board, a little bit of news, a little bit of that, a little music director with my friend Art L. Cooper. Hi, Art. Realized I wasn't going to get rich on that. So what I did on a whim, I made an audition tape, the world's worst audition tape, Michael, and I sent it to CKPG in Prince George, a station that is no longer on the air. It was owned by Bill Bellman of Q Broadcasting back in the day, you're familiar with. A lovely gentleman who, sadly, we lost too early, named Don Prentice, foolishly gave me a shot, hired me to do all nights in Prince George. So I moved from Victoria, got the first jet ride I ever took, went to Prince George and found out, oh boy, I'm in for it now. Prince George wasn't exactly Victoria.
No, a bit of a culture shock, I would imagine.
Yes. The Inn of the North, the world-famous pub, and was at that time the biggest pub in the world. We used to enjoy going over, taking our massive paycheck, spending it on beer, and then watching the fights. That was about as exciting as it got, I'm afraid.
Who were some of the other people you were working with there? Can you remember?
I sure can. I was very lucky. I worked with Graydon McHugh, who went on to great success in Alberta. He's a wonderful announcer. Randy Seabrook, who's now the general manager up there. Randy, of course, the Seabrook family, very well known. I worked with Tiny Elphick's son, Bob, who was our sports director, an absolutely wonderful man. Gary Arthur, who went on to run the Calgary Stampeders. What it got down to, Michael, is I was the worst radio announcer in the world, I'll be honest with you, but I got to work with terrific people that took the time to sit down with me and say, let's try this. The generosity is what saved me. I found that, I said, gee, you know, these people are actually helping me make a living, and that's where I really got the bug in Prince George, and from then on, it was history.
I think that was the problem in the last 20 years, is there's nothing like that. People go to school now, they put in their 2 years,
right?
Then they go out, they're supposed to be prepared,
right,
to be a broadcaster after 2 years of school.
Right.
But we had the luxury of working with people who were already in the business, who had been in the business for a long time, and had the time to share their expertise with new people.
Well, you worked with people like Dick Smythe, and I'm not going to speak for Mr. Smythe, but I know this for a fact. He would take the time, if he heard something you were doing, he would take the time, and not in a berating way, say, hey, Michael, step into my office for a second. He'd take your copy, he'd go over it with you and say, this is good, this is bad, try this. When I worked at CFTR in Toronto, when I was up against you back in the 70s, my program director was a guy named Chuck Camrew. Chuck Camrew was a genius. He said, Tom, I hired you because I know what you can do, but what I want you to do is pay attention to what I say. So about once a month we get together. He didn't berate me. He didn't call me out. He didn't call me an idiot. He say, I'm not too sure about this, but let's try this. The other jocks, the Jim Brady's, the Red Knights, the wonderful talents I had would actually, Michael, I know this sounds shocking to the audience now, would actually take the time and say, hey, bud, try this. We were in it together. It really was a team. It was competitive. Yes, we all wanted to be number one. But in the end, it was a team. I worked with Bill Edwards, another genius announcer, Bobby Day, Jim Brady. I worked with Carl Rampershad, people that literally made me better every day.
We jumped ahead quite a bit here, but after CKPG, I think 1972, you came back to Vancouver.
Very lucky. I came back in 72. I got fired from CKPG because I was, wasn't very good. I arrived in Vancouver, Michael, with $1.14 in my pocket and no prospects. And the only person I knew in Vancouver was Don Ramsden from Broadcast News, just a wonderful man I'd known from Victoria. And he said, hey, come and stay with me. I'll get you back on your feet. Wound up living in Coquitlam. He was working at CKVN, which later became CFund. He said, I'll tell you what, why don't you make a tape for the program director, Simon Ginsberg, we'll get you in. I said, okay. Made a tape, got a job. Worked all night weekends at CFund, which it became after about 5 months. CKVN was bought by Jack Titleman in Montreal, eventually sold to the Chum Group in 73. In came Paul Ski, in came J. Robert Wood, your friend, and we went from a fairly good radio station to a great radio station overnight. And the CFund experience, I was working with people like Bob McGee, Daryl B., J. Robert Wood. I mean, it was a blast. And we had, Michael, the two of the biggest promotions in the history, he says modestly, of Vancouver radio. Don't say hello. Say, I listen to CFun. You know that one from Chum. And we had the fun sticker. It was so much fun. Actually, I would have done it for free. We had a blast. CFun was a monster.
And several incarnations of being a monster. It had its ups and downs. By the time 1974 rolled around, you were on the move again.
I was. Paul Ski had taken over at CFun, and I was doing all nights. He knew that I had spent time in Ottawa. I should say that my dad was a career naval officer, so we lived coast to coast, Halifax to Victoria to Ottawa. And he said, listen, we got an opening at CFRA in Ottawa. For people out here on the coast don't know, CFRA is a monster station. It's been number one since you and I wore short pants. It just a great radio station. He said, how would you like to do evenings? So they hired me, went back to Ottawa. I did a show called The Campus Club for Coca-Cola between 7 and 10 in the evening. And we had, I think, a 44 share, which is a small share of the audience. And at that job, I got to meet everybody. I worked with Lowell Green. I worked with the best broadcasters in Ontario. I got to meet the Rolling Stones, you name it. And I was, of course, under the Chum barrier like you were. So I got the advantage of when I went to Chum, when I went to Toronto, Warren Cosford, your friend, would take me under his wing and help me with the production. Or I could go and see Mr. Wood in Toronto. When we took the people to see the Rolling Stones at Maple Leaf Gardens, we got to hang out with you guys, the big guys. Because we always were a little jealous of you guys at Chum because we figured, well, we're big, but we ain't Chum. So we always looked at you with great envy and not a little bit of jealousy, I must say.
You had some pretty good jocks you were working with at CFRA at that time. Was the General still doing mornings?
You've got a memory like an elephant. Indeed, General Grant, Ken Grant, owned mornings, Michael, for a number of years. I don't know how that man did it. He was everywhere. He was a wonderful mentor to us young people. He was a very kind man. He did more for charity than anybody I've ever met. He had a, I don't know what his audience was, ridiculous, 70% sure. He did it for a number of years. He got me involved in some of the charities. He got me involved working with the telethons and taught me a little television, which I hadn't experienced with. Working with Lowell Green, who's still there, the greatest talk show in Canada. I worked with Shelley Emmond, the afternoon jock, who's probably the smoothest jock ever. Worked David Watts. I mean, I could go on forever. What it comes down to, and I hope this thread is coming through here with you, Michael, is the reason if I've had any success in this business, it's because of the people I work with. Everybody along the way has always taken the time to say, you need some help? I'm here for you. What a business. And that's why I still love the business right to my core. You
know? The teamwork was there back in those days. That sort of vanished as people were required to do more and more work for less.
I've got to ask you, do you think the vanishing point that we just described came with the American model of conglomeration of stations, where it used to be when you and I started, we were allowed to have an AM and FM by one company, and that was it. Mm-hmm. Now we've got people owning multiple sticks. And what I found, Michael, is when this happened suspiciously, I noticed all the people of your ilk and my ilk that have been in the business 20, 30 years were either let go or their wages were cut. And I'm not eluding anything here. I don't want to get anybody in trouble, but I've always been suspicious us about that, because all of a sudden the heart and soul of our radio business was cut out right out from under our knees, and it hasn't come back.
My theory on that is the watershed year was 1994, when the CRTC decreed that FM stations no longer had to do foreground programming, do mosaic, but no longer had to do news.
That's a very good point.
That's when everybody got fired. All of the news and public affairs people got dumped.
But this worries me because...
And then the consolidations.
Well, that's a good point. Consolidation that we have, of course, you know, I don't even want to start on consultants, but worries me about news. And I guess I'm speaking to the converter because you're a career newsman. And I'm a jock, but I am worried about the trend here. I want news on my radio stations because I want people to ask questions of our public officials. I don't like the way the government's being run by having some factotum run up with a fact sheet and saying, this is the truth. I want a Mike Cleaver sitting across a desk from a guy saying, no, wait a minute here. Why is the mill rate going up? Why is this happening? Because what's happening here is the sophisticated way that we're treating the audience out there, they're putting them to sleep. And eventually the time will come, Michael, when the question should be asked, there's going to be nobody to ask them.
It's the big problem these days, handout journalism. Everyone has a spokesperson. Well, you can't get to the actual source.
That brings me back to another thing, too. Talk about the source. When you started in radio and you did news, when I used to walk into your newsroom or I walked into Hugh Curtis's back at CFAX in 1969, I had a stack of cards this high. I had interviews with the mayor. I had interviews with the police chief. I had interviews with everybody. Now, I have a three-minute newscast. I have a guy saying the weather is 2.5 minutes, and the other stuff is, as you say, handout news. You as a newsman, I'm turning this interview around. Does this worry you? Does this worry you for the future?
Very definitely, and I think people should look at Harvey Overfeld's blog. Probably the best digging news guy we've had on the coast for decades.
His Tamil comments recently are excellent. And it gets back to what you say about newsmen, because without guys like you that are asking the tough questions with no agenda other than finding the truth, that means our society's in trouble. That's my own feeling.
I agree entirely with that.
I think I just switched this around. I'm interviewing Mike Cleaver here.
Right, we roll up to 1976. You stayed in Ottawa at CFRA for 2 years.
I did.
Was it your choice to leave, or...?
I was working at CFRA. I loved it. My one of my very dearest friends from the University of Victoria Radio, who I neglected to mention, Clint Nickerson, who was a brilliant newsman, came to visit me in Ottawa and said, you know, you ever thought of working in Toronto? And I went, Toronto? That was like New York. Are you kidding? I'm a bum. I'm never going to make it. He said, no. He said, send a tape to my friend Chuck Cameron. I'll put a word in for you. I put a tape in. A week later, Cameron called. He said, come on, we're going to take you to the Harbor Castle Hilton. Holy cow, Mike. So they flew my wife and I of the time down, went to the Harbor Castle Hilton. We had a few glasses of wine. I signed a contract worth 5 times what I was making at CFRA. I came back to CFRA. They were not happy. Mr. Ski was not happy to see me cross the floor. I worked very happily at CFTR. At that point, as you and I both remember, the late 70s, we're talking the Bee Gees era. We're talking the Eagles at Maple Leaf Gardens. I had the chance to be the MC for Fleetwood Mac in front of 85,000 people at CNE. We had more fun than a barrel of monkeys. I used to sit on the 11th floor at 25 Adelaide Street, Michael, watching my car 11 floors below as Muhammad moved it around the parking lot, scared me to death. And I had an op. All I had to do was sit in a room, point at the guy, and he did a great job. I had more fun. CFTR highlight. I loved it.
Some of the jocks who were there at the same time you were.
Oh, boy. We had only the best. Jim Brady was our morning man. This was just before John Records Landecker was brought in. John Records Landecker, by the way, if you were to ask me the greatest jock that ever lived, it would be he. John Records Landecker of Chicago fame. Jim Brady was our morning man. We had a guy named Paul Godfrey, not the mayor. Paul Godfrey, bless his heart, passed far too young. He had a show called Boogie. He was a wonderful fellow. Dick Joseph, you remember Big Dick Joseph? We had an afternoon drive guy who was a complete maniac named Doug Thompson, who was the quietest man, but on the air, he was Red Knight. He was a genius. We had Broadway Bobby Day in the evening. I did evenings with him. It goes on and on. I could spend a week talking about the people, but the thing was that all the people that worked at TR, I'm sure there's the same at Chum, is what we couldn't wait to get to work. It was kind of embarrassing. I'd be on the subway coming in. I lived at South Kingsway in Bloor, and all the way into the, I'd be going, only a couple more minutes to go. I'd be like shot out of a cannon. Boom, I'd get on the air. Boom, I'd be on the air. Boom, I'd be off the air. It was a blast, man.
Yeah, a lot of fun. 1978 was when you made the next move, and you came back out west.
Bob Wood, thank you, Mr. Wood. But I got a phone call on a Thursday, Michael. I'll remember this day, the day that I was hot, hot day. Hi, Tommy, it's Bob Wood. Hey, Bob, what's up? We're getting sick of you killing us in the ratings. How would you like to go back home to Vancouver? Daryl B. is going to be the program director, and he wants you to do afternoons. When do I leave? He said, well, is there a problem? I said, yeah, I've got a three-year contract. He said, send me the contract. I sent him the contract. They bought the contract out. I was gone a week later. Sold the house, and I was gone. I arrived here, and literally, Michael, sorry to embarrass you Easterners, I kissed the pavement when I got off the plane. And I was at CFUN from 1978 right through 1986, doing middays and afternoons.
And let's talk about some of the people you were working with. Oh. You already mentioned a couple of names, but a lot of great people.
Oh, my God. The late Daryl B., I just wish I could introduce you to him, Michael.
He was I worked with Daryl.
Well, you know Daryl from Toronto. Yeah. He was an acerbic, supposedly tough, mean, ornery character. Far from it. He was one of the nicest people you ever met. Bob McGee, probably one of the best pure announcers in the history of Canada, as far as I'm concerned. Newsman John Hinnan. Worked with Clint Nickerson, worked with Marvin Pewdie, who was one of the funniest character voices in the world, Jim Brady. It goes on and on and on. All the people I worked with, though, were also, we'd do the show, and yet what would we do? We'd go after work and talk about radio.
And you had some great newsmen there at the same time. J.J. Well, Richards, of course.
J.J. Richards here in Vancouver is a genius. In Toronto, the name that comes besides Clint would be, of course, Larry Silver, world-famous Larry Silver. Michael will know him very well. Larry was the one writing, shall we say, purple prose leads that got the CRTC nervous. Things like, body floater found in, et cetera. No, Larry, no. Bob Holliday, these kind of people. And after that, I was, in Toronto for a few years, came back to Vancouver. In 1986, I fell in love with a girl from Nova Scotia. And I went in and said, you know what? I think I want to move to Nova Scotia. And Mr. Ski said, pardon? And I said, any chance? He says, as a matter of fact, and I won't get into the details to embarrass anyone, but the morning man at CJCH in Halifax got into a jam. And they said, would you like to go to Halifax to do mornings, Tom? And I said, no. I don't want to do mornings anymore because I've been filling with Fred and getting up at 3:45. I don't have to tell you, Michael. Yuck. Make a long story short, as I was driving across Canada, McGill, the offer got richer. By the time I reached Halifax, I just about owned the station. So I foolishly decided to do mornings at CJCH. That, along with owning a business in a small town called Mahone Bay, Nova Scotia, which is 110 kilometers out of town. So this is how stupid I am, Michael. I decide to run the business all day, get 3 hours sleep, get up to 3:45 in the morning, drive an hour and a half in to do a morning show, finish the production at 10, drive back to Mahone Bay another hour and a half, get the truck, drive across Nova Scotia, fill it up full of fruit and vegetables, come back, run the market. Tried to do that for a while. Didn't work. My doctor made a choice. He said, Tom, here's the point. You can either do mornings or you can do the market. You can't do both. So I had to give up radio. Long story short, I won't even get into why I wound up living in Mexico. That for another time.
So Halifax is history.
Yes.
That's 1990. You come back to Vancouver again.
I do. I was living in Mexico. I lived in Mexico for a long time in a small town called Zihuatanejo. We'll talk about that another time. It was a wonderful place. I arrived in Vancouver in tough shape. I don't mind saying this publicly. I'm a recovering alcoholic. I was in very tough shape. Joined Alcoholics Anonymous through the guidance of some very kind friends who you know. And luckily it took. I've been sober for just about 21 years. A gentleman who I'm very fond of and love very much by the name of Ted Farr, who is the program director at CKWX, heard that I was in trouble. I'm sorry to embarrass you, Ted. And he phoned me and found me. He said, why don't you come in and see me? Okay, I came in and he said, look, I don't have anything for you right now, but Jim Fraser, another brilliant announcer, one of the nicest people in the business, had some time off. He said, could you do Jim's show just one day next week, please, because he can't. I said, okay. So the Terrell Rothery, another wonderful person, showed me how to run the board. I did the show with Greg Douglas, another great sports guy, one of my best buds. And the phone rang the day after and said, hey, how would you like to come work for us? And that's how it started. I worked at WX for about 3 weeks, and they said, Dale Biot, still one of my favorite all-time program directors, said, we'd like you to come and work at KISS FM. And I crossed the hall, and I was with KISS FM from 1990 right through 2001.
And you were doing?
Afternoons. Uh-huh. Afternoon drive, I did 2 to 6. And also I had the pleasure, although sometimes it wasn't a pleasure getting the phone call, but I filled in for Fred on Latcher mornings when he was away on his trips. It was a great honor to fill in for the best announcer in Canada. I'm not sure I was quite up to his snuff, but I did my best.
There were good people there as well.
Oh, man, all became friends. You know, still there. Terry Chan is now, you know, the assistant program director, along with my friend. He used to be the program director in Halifax, Murray Brookshaw, another really great guy. We had Colleen Troy, who's now working for Jimmy Pattison. She was great. If I sat here running down the list of people I work with, we'd never get through the interview. But again, it gets back to, Michael, I've been so lucky. These really tremendously talented people that we, and all we did was laugh. We had a great time. And there's some bad times too, and I want to talk about that too. Can I take a second for this? I want to address people who are getting a chance here, and you're smart to listen to Michael because this guy's done it, but I want to give you just a back of the envelope thing. Always, this is Red Robinson speaking through me, always have a plan B. Always make sure that you're protected. Always make sure that you are expanding your skill base. Don't stand still. The gentleman interviewing here, Michael Cleaver, didn't. I didn't. Learn something new every day at work. Make sure you protect yourself. Make sure you show up. Make sure you're a good employee. No negatives. We hate that. And number two, remember, you are very lucky to work in a business as wonderful as radio, because I said earlier to Michael, no heavy lifting. No windows. You heard it from the kid.
The year 2000 rolls around, new century. You go to another station, CKBD.
Yes, and I'm going to just make this in a couple of sentences. I don't want to get the wrong thing. I took over against my better judgment. I was very fond of Rick Honey, and Rick, bless his heart, passed far too young. They approached me to fill in for him, and then they asked me to take over a show at 600 a.m. I did it against my best. I really thought it was hard. I shouldn't have done it, Michael. And I want to couch this carefully, but it didn't work out. I didn't see eye to eye with the management. I didn't see eye to eye with the owners. That's the one company I can say, and I'm sorry, folks, I'm going to tell you the truth, the only company I would never work for again.
So that was about a two-year period that you did that. I get the feeling that you're not a morning guy.
I am a morning guy. I am if the situation is right, but I am no longer a morning guy. I was a morning guy was when I was of a certain age, but once I turned 22, I found it more difficult. You and I both have done mornings for years. Folks, unless you've been up at 3:45 in the morning, you have no idea what it's like. The hardest thing in the world, as Red Robinson says, is the time between the alarm going off at 3:45 and the time your feet hit the floor. It is an absolute soul-destroying job. You have no social life, and I think it ages you. See, what happens is you do the morning show, folks. Then you got to write the next show, right? So you get home, you have your day, as Michael just said, you have your nappy. Then you've got it. It's a Sisyphus job. You get up every day, you got to push the rock up the stupid hill.
You know? And in the winter, it's dark every time you're getting up.
and back in the day, you weren't here. You were back in Ontario. I say this to people, the climate's really changed here in Vancouver. We're drifting from radio, but it really has. Back in the, when I was working at CFUN back in the 70s, Michael, when I was working nights, I didn't see the sun from November till March. Now, the climate's changed. You actually do see the sun occasionally. It's drier, it's windier here. We didn't have palm trees in 1972 here, big guy.
So the full-time gigs came to an end in 2003, but you've been doing some weekend freelance fill-in work.
Yep. And through the ways, Tom Plasteris and Ian Konigsvest, my friends at NW, asked me to come and take over from Cameron Bell to do the weekend morning news. I did that with great joy for a couple of weekends, but unfortunately, August 27th, 2 years ago, I wasn't feeling well and wound up having massive seizures. I wound up in intensive care, and thanks to Dr. Arsenault and Dr. Clark and their wonderful team at ICU, I made it. It was a very close thing. So I did some reevaluation, Miguel, as we all will, and I realized that perhaps my days of working full-time are over. Right now, as we're sitting in my office here in Gastown, I've got a partner, a genius by the name of Lawrence McDonald. We're working with new media, but I'm only doing as much as I think it's possible. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be doing some radio for another company here in Canada, but just on a part-time basis. But if I could wrap this up in this wonderful visit with you, again, not to embarrass you, but it's been a real pleasure actually meeting you, because as I said, for years in Toronto, I used to just hate you because you used to kill us. This guy used to kill us in the rain. Who's this Cleaver guy? But as it turns out, he's a nice guy, and I'm really glad you're living on the coast. You made a smart move moving to Vancouver. Don't go back to Toronto.
I'd like to wrap these up with a couple of questions.
Sure.
Your very favorite moment in your broadcast career?
My very favorite moment in my broadcast career. I think my favorite all-time time on the air was during an interview. It wasn't live, and it was with W.O. Mitchell. W.O. Mitchell is my favorite author, and we were kidding around after the interview, and he was autographing the book. And his wife is from Mahone Bay, Nova Scotia, where I used to live in. So he made a crack, and we start to laugh. That was one of my favorite memories. I'm sitting there thinking, I'm getting paid to talk to W.O. Mitchell. That was a thrill. The off-the-air thrill, if I could sort of add a B to that, is I used to work at Richards on Richards when it used to be Richards on Richards. And one night, I looked down, and who walks in but Muhammad Ali? And I stopped. I put my hand on the record, and I said, that's it. The champ's in the house. I ran down, elbowed every. It was embarrassing, Michael. Everybody out of the way, and I walked up, and I just said, champ, I would really want to shake your hand. And you can only imagine, I'm 6'1". My hand disappeared, and I shook Muhammad Ali's hand. The third one would be, if I had one other thrill, it would be meeting Paul McCartney. I had a chance to meet Paul, and you'll like this. As I had a chance to meet Paul. I had my tape recorder. He was a delightful man. And I said, you know, any chance for an interview? Sure, Mike, go ahead. So I go for the review, and I'm just thrilled, Michael. I'm Paul McCartney, yeah! I get back to the station. I realized I hadn't pushed record. And the last thing is I got to meet my wife, Julie, at Kiss FM, and it's the light of my life. So I've been a pretty lucky fella.
Favorite person in the biz that you worked with?
I think the nicest person, I'm going to sort of step aside from the air work because I don't want to insult anybody because there's so many nice people, but the nicest person, the person I liked the best of all the people I met in radio was J. Robert Wood. Bob Wood was the program director, national program director of CHUM. He treated me with nothing but respect and kindness. He was an absolute tremendous leader. I miss him very much. I just wish we could still work together. But I think of all the people, and boy, it's like I said, Michael, you're right. I met a ton, yourself included, nice people. I think it would have to be Bob Wood. Second, the air person, the nicest person on the air I've ever met, is still my dearest friend, Fred Latrimo.
Any hope for radio in the future?
Radio, yes. I don't think, I'm not a doomsayer. I know you're not. We're hopeful people. I think that the radio model we have now is broken. I think what's going to happen is going to port. We're going to go to handheld. We're going to go to smartphones. We are going to go to our iPads. We are going to go et cetera, et cetera. You're going to see apps like Chorus. You're going to see CHUM have a front end. That's where it's going to go. I don't see any future for satellite radio. I think that's a broken model. I think television's in trouble. Television's absolutely ass backwards, pardon my French. They're going to have to fix that. I think the time is never going to change where people will want to hear other people's voices on the radio. I just think that the model that you and I were raised with is over, and it's got to be fixed. I hope it's going to be fixed in my time because I still like listening to the radio.
So do I.
Thanks for the time, Michael.
Tom Jeffries, great meeting you.
Pleasure, thank you.